Today's Fan Run Podcast is brought to you by DraftKings.
Basketball teams are entering the final month of the regular season, and they're gearing up for the playoffs. DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app, is putting you in the center of all the action with a chance to turn $1 into $100 in free bets. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code FANRUN in all caps when you sign up to turn $1 into $100 in free bets if the basketball team of your choosing hits a three. That's code FANRUN in all caps for a limited time and only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older and Tennessee only to bet. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line 1-800-889-9789.
It's that time of the day of the week, so we kick off hour number three. It's Davey. It's the Depot. It's the Davey Depot. Davey Hudson, your host, take it away.
I hope everyone is off to a good start on this Friday morning. I don't know about you all, but I'm excited for the weekend. So I hope everyone able to finish strong as we get ready to head into what should be a fun Saturday and Sunday. For those that will be watching the Base Vols take on the Vanderbilt Doors, you know, hope we get some wins there. But like I said it earlier in the show, and I'll say it again, I think me being so positive just drained me of energy yesterday, and that's why the Depot didn't live up to expectations. So today should be much better, seeing as I've not been super positive. We'll see how that works. To get things started, my fact of the day, you know, I was debating a couple of options, but I've decided to go with this one. Does anyone here know the fictitious character under the name Captain Crunch?
Yeah, I'm familiar with the captain.
Well, his full name is Horatio Magellan Crunch.
Horatio Magellan?
He's also been called out for only having the bars of a Navy commander, but the so-called captain held his ground on Twitter, arguing that captaining the SS Guppy with his crew makes an official captain in any book.
Makes sense to me.
Horatio Magellan Crunch. Captain Crunch, banger for today. Take Me Home, Country Roads, John Denver.
Oh, no kidding.
Incredible song. Gambling for today.
Think about that West Virginia game. Oof.
It was pretty cool.
It was.
Now that
I had fun.
Well, now that we can.
Yeah, it was fun.
Now that we can bag on Pruitt, now I can enjoy it in retroactively.
We're so good at cover two.
Nigel Warrior not want to hit that guy. I lost it. That was my breaking point. I think I was out on Jeremy Pruitt.
You yeah.
Deep down after that game, the first one. Hopefully, hype will be the opposite.
Do we have two weather delays or just one? I think we had one, and then I know we had another one the next week.
That Charlotte Stadium, sneaky good concessions. Whew, man. They had lots of different options. Mm-hmm. Remember when the alcohol line was crazy long, and we found that one over to the side where all you know, it's just like credit card only? It's like, okay.
You got it.
Great. They're like, all we have is wine and this massive selection of canned beer. That's, yeah.
Sold.
A beer is what we wanted. Great. But you have to have a credit card. Even better.
Is Will Greer elite?
He was that
good
day.
Times. That was a Cody line that Cody asked 10,000 people maybe on the way to the stadium.
Yep. Mm. Yep. It was funny, though.
So.
What a day. Bus trip.
What else?
Back to the Depot.
Gambling. Hockey, man. Rough outing last night.
Yeah,
Pins lost in a shootout.
Alex is broke because every time he rides with you, you lose. And then he loses.
Yeah. Still up a good amount on the year, but the last week, not been pleasant. But, you know, I mean, that's part of it. You're not going to do great every week. Tonight, though, Alex, you're probably going to take this anyway. I think this line's slightly off based off my numbers, but the Knicks are a 5.5-point dog to the Mavericks. Sorry, it took me a second. Mavericks coming off of an emotional win, crazy win, actually, where they beat Memphis. Memphis did cover, though. But give me the Knicks plus 5.5 tonight. I'm expecting some more NBA picks later on. The Lions in hockey, they're nothing I'm tempted to take. So that's kind of where we are. But again, still overall, if you've just been riding with me for every night for the last couple of months now, you're going to be up a couple grand. So congrats to you for doing that. And if you just sporadically ride with me and your name's Alex, sucks to suck. So
wow.
That's the big update for the three things that lead into my movie, which I said was based off a true story. This movie is called 2012. We all lived that year. Granted, your 2012 experience might have been different than how the movies came about. I actually really like reviewing the disaster films. You know, like there's like some sort of global disaster and the world is forever different. This, if you remember, if you can think back in 2012 was the end, I believe it was December the 21st, was the end of the Mayan calendar. And it was pretty much this generation's Y2K. So that came and went. We're still here. For Tennessee football's sake, it might have been best if the events of the movie actually took place. But, all right, so we started off, okay? And where do we start? This movie's kind of all over the place. Oh, yeah, we're in 2010. And these scientists go to this diamond mine. And while they're in the diamond mine, they're realizing, like, the Earth's core is heating up to a point that it's not sustainable. And basically, like, the Mayans are right. And we're going to have the core heat up to a certain point to where massive disasters are happening across the globe. You know, volcanic eruptions, tsunamis based off of gigantic earthquakes. Bleep's about to hit the fan. And so we have this plan to where the government is going to start building these giant arcs, all right? So basically Noah 2.0. But what they do is so they go to the Himalayans. Himalayas, yeah. Yeah. Himalayans?
It's the Himalayan mountains.
Okay. Can help with the whole pan below.
The Himalayans, that's correct.
Okay. So the Tibetan government, well, really it's the Chinese government. We know how this all works. But we're in Tibet. And they're asking if anyone here can weld. And this one guy's like, I can weld. They don't ask it in English. They ask it in, I guess, whatever they speak over there in Tibet. And his family, who he has, like, his younger brother's like a monk. Him and his grandparents basically are shipped out of the area. And so there's just this giant wall of dynamite explosion taking place, and so that is just foreshadowing where they are going to be building these arcs. And so they just kind of hurry over all of these different things that are happening from like 2010 to leading up to 2012. And so they're like taking the Mona Lisa, and they are putting up a fake or forgery that way that they can have all these prized possessions for whenever these events do take place, and they will be able to survive everything that is about to come their way. And it's a global thing, so we have different governments taking courses of action, but the plan that is unfolding is one in which we're going to have to get all these people, well, not all of them, but they don't even tell the world, like, what is about to happen. They're just like, oh, we got to keep this a secret. So, like, people just start dying if they're about to blow the whistle. And so Danny Glover's president, need to let you know that. But then kind of our main characters throughout the film, even though he had a decent little comeback stint, like he had like Hot Tub Time Machine, and then of course he did 2012. Those were around like 2009, 2010. This movie came out and I believe it was 2009. That way they had 3 years, you know, before they're like, oh, we can get our run on this film for 3 years until 2012 actually hits and the world does go by the wayside. But so we flash forward and we're in the year 2012, and so John Cusack, I don't even think I said his name, but John Cusack is kind of the main star of the film. John Cusack is taking his family, his two kids, to Yellowstone, and his ex-wife, Amanda Peet, which we actually talked about yesterday, mm-hmm. Her and her boyfriend, I don't think they're married, they're kind of like at this grocery store, giant earthquake hits out in California, and so we're just getting basically kind of like the day after tomorrow where crazy things just start happening. Or really any film of this sort. But so while John Cusack's in Yellowstone, he comes across Woody Harrelson. Woody Harrelson's like this guy who's thinking, like, the world's coming to an end. The government's hiding it. Here's all these conspiracies. And so, but he decided to go to what was going to be the world's largest superactive volcano, which we've talked about on the show before. Like, Yellowstone, I mean, it's a dormant volcano right now, but, like, if it were to explode, like, everything Western United States is pretty much done at that point. And so he's there for the giant explosion. He's going to watch it. And so, but John Cusack, he's a limo driver, former writer, and he wrote this book that one of the main scientists has read, but it only like sold like five. It's like Farewell Atlantis is the name of the book or whatever. But so John Cusack's like, oh man, this stuff is pretty crazy. It's all that's happening. But he works for this Russian billionaire as like a limo driver, chauffeur kind of guy. And so that guy's got two twins, Alex and Olaf or something like that. Maybe it's Oleg. I don't know. Russian. I don't know. Ugly kids. Just boo. But so he's like, the kids don't like John Cusack, and John Cusack basically like he doesn't like them either. And he's like, you know, we're getting on a ship. We're going to live. You're going to die. And that kind of like tips John Cusack off. It's like, oh, so it's actually happening. So, basically, all of California is falling into the ocean after these giant earthquakes. We get a lot of really crazy special effects. And so they're, like, trying to fly a plane through, like, skyscrapers falling down. Like, you just see people dying left and right. These old ladies die at one point. Not going to lie, it was kind of funny. Sad, but funny. Sorry.
What's wrong with you?
I don't know. You just had to watch the movie.
I've seen it.
Okay. And so then they end up in Vegas. They survive, like, getting through the volcano at Yellowstone, and they're in Vegas, and they meet up with Yuri, who's the Russian billionaire, and his pilot's name is Sasha, and so they have a giant plane when they realize they need to go to Tibet, or really China, or whatever you want to call it, to get to these arcs. And so then they manage to barely escape the disaster happening in Vegas, and really, like, the world's pretty much done. But then we get to the mountains, and people die here, people die there, and then, like, John Cusack, him and his wife, or ex-wife, they kind of reconcile. Yuri, he ends up sacrificing his life to save his ugly kids. And so then, you know, after, like, 27 days of a giant tsunami taking over Mount Everest, you just see the wave come in. They're like, all right, we got sightings of the water receding, and so we're going to go to the Cape of Good Hope, and that part of Africa is like the first part to survive, and that's where civilization will be restored. And that was the true story of 2012.
True story.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's right.
I got it in under time today. Thought I showed some enthusiasm while I was giving the story.
We should rate the depot each day.
I give the movie like a quarter of a thumbs up. Oh, yeah. And the monk guy, his brother, who was the welder, ends up like sneaking them onto the ship. So they live too. So, you know, we really just tried to make sure we covered all different walks of life in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
I got a 100% profit boost on any NBA bet. So do I take it on Knicks plus +5?
Oh, baby.
So if you got 100% profit boost, here's what I would actually do, Alex. I would probably go into the alternate lines and go to like Knicks plus +7 just to buy you a point and a half there. And then that profit boost of 100% is going to take you still to a really good portion. I don't know what the odds are going to come out there, but I would do that. Or just pick two games
plus
that are
140.
See, I mean, if you even want to be safer, maybe go like plus +8.
All right.
Did I get that?
Nathan Janeway has tweeted in a picture. Davy Hudson, perfectly framed, doing the depot, and it says, what if I told you this guy reviews movies on a public broadcast, officiates weddings, and has a law degree?
I also get the boost, too, Alex. That's good
Brad
news.
Brad Rose tweets in, that would be one heck of a 30 for 30 one day. Especially if Tennessee gets back. Football and basketball and baseball.
At least he did rep the balls today.
We're
That's good.
We're just rolling.
I think I'm putting 3/4 of my account on this bet, Davey.
From Cooler, to chili hot Davey Hudson, a lifetime of sports in Knoxville on Rocky Top. Be good.
Nah.
West Virginia, Blue Ridge Mountains, Shenandoah River. Life is old there, older than
Banger.
The trees, younger than the mountains.
Yeah, it just is.
Like
it was painful that one day, but it just is. Well, it's not like we have to deal with them year in, year out, you know? This is like a conference team, kind of different, but I had to take a detour one time, coming back from D.C. It was rough, ended up in West Virginia. Hadn't been such a long trip, it had been such a pretty drive.
I don't mind West Virginia.
Yeah, they really are like an SEC team, though.
More so than Missouri.
100%. And Vanderbilt. Although I kind of like having Vandy. What?
What's the name of the town where West Virginia is?
Morgan.
Morgantown.
Morgantown, yeah. Morgan. That's not a bad little spot. Went there, been to Huntington, saw Marshall's campus.
Yeah. I haven't been, been to any of those.
Yeah, it's not bad.
In fact, I'm not sure I've been in West Virginia except for that one time driving through.
Really?
I can't think of any other time I would have even gone through it.
It's a fine little spot.
Had a trip planned to snowshoe. Then COVID. Into last winter. At least it wasn't my buddy down the street. They got there first night expecting to hit the snow the slopes the next morning. Sheet under the door.
Said, get out.
We've just been notified that our parent company has closed all ski resorts across the country. We're closing effective immediately. We're closing the slopes effective immediately. You know, I mean, they gave them till like whatever the checkout time the next day to, you know, pack up and leave. And of course, refunded them all their money and everything. But imagine driving all the way up that to West Virginia, up the mountain.
Wouldn't do it.
Unpacking for the, you know, in the evening. Getting settled in the night, all ready to ski the next morning, and pack it all back.
Be bad news.
Yeah. Family, too. So you got the kids' stuff. Ugh.
Yeah, it's brutal, man.
Rough. All right. It's hour three. A couple hours closer to first pitch. 7 o'clock.
I'm pumped.
Rocker. Dallas.
That's going to be – it's going to be rowdy, man.
Vols.
People that couldn't get in now being able to get in. Taking the series over Florida. I mean, Eric said it earlier. First time I'm going to watch them. I'm excited. It's nice to have something, you know? Something good.
Yeah.
Tony V, thank you. Now get that man a stadium or an upgrade. Whatever. Whatever he wants. Just make it happen. It's really all that matters.
Yeah. Well, we can. I mean, this is one of those prove it moments. And I'm with you. I mean, you could play well in all three games. You could win them all. You could lose them all. Or you could split them, obviously, 2-1 either way. I just think this is one of those moments where you see if the team can elevate their play. Because I'm trying to make a comparison. I mean, I guess it's like we see it in football all the time, and in football it doesn't really translate because typically in football, the team with superior talent eventually, like the team that's kind of been going through the year and winning games by being a collective, you know, sum of the parts that's greater than the individuals, you know, usually at some point you hit the wall and you run out of gas. I mean, you know,
right.
The teams that win the national championship in college football always have had monster recruiting classes along the way.
For the most,
you know, I mean, I guess Clemson maybe in the first one would be the best example of a team that didn't, but then they got those players, you know, moving forward and, you know, whatever. But in other sports, I mean, it's happened. I mean, teams that haven't – I mean, there's been baseball teams for sure that haven't recruited like a Vanderbilt has that have elevated and just been better. Maybe it's because the recruiting services aren't as plugged in with baseball and basketball. They're more with football, maybe. I don't know.
I feel like they're okay with basketball. Baseball is just tough, man.
Well, baseball, too. Like, you can get a big-time recruit, and then lose them
to
the draft before they ever get there. But, I mean, I don't know. I'm from South Carolina originally, and because I knew people, they're more baseball guys, actually followed their baseball much longer than I followed their – I mean, for their football, I just follow them like any other SEC team, but their baseball, actually new guys in the program that I went to school with, and then my sisters are both younger, so guys that they went to school with ended up going there. And I don't think their recruiting got really good, but I think they kind of got good, went to Omaha before that, if that makes sense. So, I mean, Tennessee's recruiting has been good enough to be that type of team. This is one of those moments where, like, is this team – that type of team, or is this team just, have they just kind of gotten fortunate, and yeah, they got a good eye at the plate, and we broke down the stats. Tennessee's record in conference, same as Vanderbilt's, but they haven't been nearly as dominant. Are they able to continue to play that style of baseball against the best teams and win games, win series? Because Florida's good.
I mean, they're talented. They were preseason number one. They've had a disappointing.
But Florida hasn't played like Vanderbilt has.
No.
So it's a different animal. It's another step up. It's the same type of talent level from a recruiting standpoint, but Vanderbilt's played like it. They've played up to that talent level.
Well, it's kind of a bummer, too, because who was the pitcher we lost with the, like, tore his hamstring? I mean, was he our best pitcher?
This season?
Mm-hmm.
I'm blanking right now.
You don't know this? Sad. I know exactly what you're talking about. I don't remember who it is, though.
Because I think initially he was supposed to be...
Oh no, he was one of the,
he was one of the main three. It was it was Tidwell, Dallas, and him. And he I think he completely tore his hamstring.
Leith, right?
Yep, Jackson Leith.
Jackson Leith, yeah. I don't even know. Did he?
Oh, he's gonna pitch as a starter and a power bullpen arm is what.
Yeah, he would have been.
He only got like 2.5 innings, one game, right? Like he did not get to pitch much this season. I feel like he did not. We never even got to see him really. Did he do that in the game, or was that, like, outside of any idea?
Oh, I don't know.
I just remember seeing it. I never really understood what
happened. He threw 5 2/3 innings with 6 strikeouts in his season debut against Georgia Southern.
Mm-hmm. And that was it, right?
Hold on.
I mean, I know that's pitching. We're talking about batting specifically, but it would be nice to have one more kind of ace.
Right.
Yeah, I guess that was it.
Tonight's going to be interesting because as much as I want to shell him, like, Rocker's going to be a handful. Can we pitch well enough to stay in it, and then can we either wear him down? I mean, this is assuming he doesn't come out and just have an awful night. Can we wear him down enough? That's the one thing that, because we take so many balls and we're really good at fighting off certain pitches, we get guys up in the pitch count quickly.
No, that'll be key, but it's a fine line, you know. If he's getting ahead of everyone, I mean, the philosophy behind baseball and hitting has always been fascinating to me because sometimes really good pitchers are good because they've got a really good fastball and they can throw the fastball on the first pitch, and a lot of guys want to see a pitch, so now they're down 0-1 in the count, right? So it's like, okay. He's probably coming fastball in the strike zone first pitch. Well, A, it's a good fastball. It's hard to just hit it even if you kind of know it's fastball. But B, because I haven't seen a pitch yet, even if I kind of time it up well, I'm going to be able to hit it well. And then if I take it, I'm down 0-1. But if I swing, I'm probably less likely to put it in play or, you know, hit it hard somewhere because I haven't seen a pitch yet at all. And I want to be patient and drive up his pitch count. So, I mean, even on the first pitch, what will Tennessee's philosophy be? Because most good pitchers are able to start guys with a strike on the first pitch without getting rocked on the first pitch, and that's kind of the key.
Well, I noticed in certain situations, it felt like we took the first pitch almost every time to get a feel for it, I guess.
Yeah, Vitello said it's a balance that you have to have with that, where it's, you don't want to be too aggressive and swinging out of your shoes on the first pitch, but at the same time, like, sometimes that's the best pitch you're going to get during an at-bat.
Yep.
And that's what he complained about a little bit last week at the end of the Florida series in his press conference, you know, because Max Ferguson hadn't exactly been living up to he's going to be a top 10 pick. He hadn't exactly played to that level to start the season. Pavloni has been struggling a little bit at the plate. You know, people were asking him about Max Ferguson, about how he's kind of passive at the plate and kind of letting a lot of pitches go and watching pitches. And he said, I understand what he's doing. And he goes, and I understand, you know, he's being a little bit too selective. And he said, but you have to have that balance of being aggressive enough to where it's an advantage for your team, and then there comes a point where you're just too aggressive to where it's becoming a disadvantage, and it's kind of hard to gauge that sometimes. Sometimes you're just too passive.
Mm-hmm.
But the way Ferguson played against Western Carolina, I mean, he was within a triple of the cycle within his first three at-bats.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously a game like that has to give a hitter who's been struggling a little bit out the gates, especially for a hitter of his quality, an extreme boost of confidence going into the series.
Yeah, I mean, the pitching wasn't great, but the bats looked good.
Yeah.
And I feel like you're going to need to I know they won, was it game two, where we had, three hits and scored five runs?
Yeah.
I know a lot of that was we took a lot of balls.
Yeah.
Certainly. You're going to have to put the bat on the ball this series.
Yeah, with Rocker and Leiter, they don't walk too many guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll get a few walks, but you know, you're mostly going to get pitches that you can hit. It's just a matter of being able to hit some top quality pitches, because these guys are going to be top five draft picks, and it's the ultimate measuring stick for guys like I mentioned, Ferguson, who you know is going to be a first round pick, as well as some other guys who maybe have something to prove to get their draft stock up a little bit. Like, well, this is the ultimate opportunity for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get to face, you know, the best of the best that are going to be big league arms. And so it's time to show what you can do at the plate against those guys. I don't know. I mean, like, listen to this. National champions in baseball. I mean, I kind of forgotten. I mean, Vanderbilt is the defending national champ, really, because they didn't play last year. And then 2019, you know, they won the championship. But listen to some of these teams that have won it all. And obviously, lots of teams have got to Omaha that aren't, you know, that Tennessee has recruited as well or even better than. But these are teams that won the whole freaking thing. Oregon State, Florida, Coastal Carolina, Virginia, Vanderbilt, 2014, UCLA, Arizona, South Carolina, a couple times, LSU, Fresno State, came out of nowhere and won that one in 2008. Goes to, of course, the Coastal Carolina team in 2016, I don't think had, you know, a ton of accolades from a recruiting standpoint. That Virginia team was 44-24. Don't remember their talent level, but, you know, they got hot at the right time. You know, obviously there's a lot of power teams in there, but, you know, There's some of those baseball powers that aren't really powers anything else, like Cal State Fullerton and Rice that won titles in the early 2000s. I mean, it's just – we're just asking the question, you know, Pepperdine, 1992, lots of other teams in between. We're asking the question this weekend, is this Tennessee team just a team that's played kind of outside the Florida series, a little bit of a weaker schedule to start their SEC run? And yeah, they're good, but maybe not like, you know, top eight. Top 16, like, where are we? Are we top 8? Are we top 16? I mean, that's how baseball works. Or are you just kind of top 32, and Vanderbilt's going to be the ultimate measuring stick, because on the mound, they're as good as it gets, and at the plate, obviously we went through the numbers earlier, they're first in a lot of those categories as well. Come back with more. Stick with us right here on Fan Run Radio. Welcome back. Hour three, three and out. Taking you into the weekend. This segment brought to you by Smarter Searches. Check them out online at smartersearches.com for all your digital marketing needs right here in Knoxville. Smarter Searches, proud sponsors of FanRunRadio.com. Check them out at smartersearches.com. Tell them you heard about them on 3 and Out Fan Run Radio. I like this one, Davey.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a banger.
Put Billy Ray on the map.
Yep.
It did.
And we got Miley.
She started fine.
Mm-hmm.
Then she went a little.
She just stayed Hannah Montana.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't.
It's childhood stars, man.
I don't really keep up with it. I don't really know.
I don't.
What's going on? I don't
know. Nate, big pop culture guy.
There's a fascinating debate going on Twitter, Houston,
mm-hmm.
about how you rate college basketball, like Tennessee's basketball recruiting classes. Do you rate them? Obviously, you can rate them kind of in the moment with just the rankings,
mm-hmm.
or you can rate them way after the fact with how they did, and what do you consider success or failure?
Mm.
So I think the hardest thing to rate is a class like this one last year with Keon and Jaden Springer, because on paper, it was great. Right? It's really, really highly ranked class.
Well, and clearly they're two good players. I mean, they're going to go in the first round of the draft.
Right. And when they, and when they played, they got in the starting lineup as fast as they needed to be. They were the go to players. When you look at, like, KenPom and the way all that stuff goes, I mean, they were who Tennessee relied on and played through. So. But the team, you know, was bounced and bounced pretty easily in the first round of the tournament and didn't make it past the semis of the SEC tournament and didn't finish highly ranked in the regular season in the mm-hmm. SEC even. So do you consider that recruiting class, you know, I don't know how you want to rate it. I don't know that it was a bust. I think when I think of bust, I think of a highly recruited guy that literally can't play. And those guys, as you said, were good players. So I wouldn't mm-hmm. call it a bust, but I would call it a disappointing recruiting class.
I don't think it was
just a disappointing team.
Yeah, I don't think it was a disappointing recruiting class. I just think for whatever reason that team never really came together.
Mm.
So yeah, I mean it's not their fault, I wouldn't think. Right? I mean,
right.
I just think the team, and maybe that's. So it wasn't last year's recruiting class. Maybe it was some of the recruiting classes before that mm-hmm. that didn't pan out. And I think at the end of the season, you saw that when you lose Pember to transfer, Gaines to transfer, Walker to transfer. You know, that team just never quite came together the way we all hoped it would.
Right.
Very sad. But on paper, this looks to be a team that is a little bit more put together as far as what Barnes wants to do with, mm-hmm. you know, his basketball program. So instead of, I think that's one of the things that made last year so frustrating. It's like, okay, we don't have a post that we can just play through. Let's stop trying to do that. And we just never really did it with Huntley Hatfield and Adu. And if Fulkerson, like, you're going to have that ability. So maybe we can get back to something Barnes is a little bit more comfortable with. And we see the offense work even better with this group, even though they may not have the superstar slashing guards like Jaden and Keon. Does that make sense? Like,
yep.
It's a different mix of really good players, but it might actually fit what Barnes wants to do better, and then maybe the production offensively especially goes up, which is, well, what we all want.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm never really going to worry about a Barnes defense. Like, he recruits guys that are bought in, and if you're not playing well defensively, you're probably going to sit down, but we have to be able to, you know, match certain teams like an Alabama, we have to be able to hang in games with them and not go through. I mean, that was the story of last year. It's like, oh, here comes another 5-minute scoring drought. And then, you know, it's not like you're giving up a 10-0 run in a minute and a half, but when you're not scoring for 5-6 minutes, all of a sudden you look up and they've been on a, you know, 12-0 run, but it's taken them 6 minutes to do it. We got to find a way to bust those offensive slumps. Hopefully with this team, you know, dump it down to Huntley Hatfield, get a quick bucket, get everybody kind of going again.
Mm-hmm.
But we will see.
I do wonder, I mean, like we talked about the other day with a post player, you know, I know Barnes said he wanted more of an inside presence. That doesn't necessarily mean he wants, you know, to try and play Patrick Ewing, Ralph Sampson post-style,
right,
dump it in.
Right.
But, I mean, because a lot of these post guys now, they're more skilled, like Huntley Hatfield. I mean, like, let them set ball screens so mm-hmm. that when their guy has the hedge, now they're a weapon, right? We saw
right.
that. We talked about that with even the traditional post guys that we saw in the Final Four. That's the way they use those guys.
Yep.
Huntley Hatfield projects the same way, I would assume, right? I mean, a big 6'9", big guy, can shoot.
Like, yeah, Julius Randle, according to Alex.
Let him set some ball screens. Let him then be just a monster heading towards the basket, but also be able to pop and either shoot the three or pop to gain separation so that when he catches it, then he can attack the basket face up too.
And he's not bad at putting the ball on the floor based on the highlight
said,
videos
yeah.
I watch. Now, depending on the defender, that might change, but yeah, this is a big man with some skill. And it's weird. He plays taller than 6'9". He's got some long, like he's, and I like the way he rebounds too. He's not one of these like, oh yeah, I'm just kind of down here. Like he works for it. I'm excited
yeah.
to see this guy in orange and white for sure. What was that? Who made that graphic that he sent out where he's half skeleton?
I do
what
not
was,
know that.
Well, I don't
strange.
Get that. I don't get that. Is he like, is he a scary guy?
I don't know.
He liked it. He tweeted it out.
Mm.
Kind of strange.
I don't know.
Kind of looked like a cyborg.
It was like a zombie something. I don't know. It's just weird. Don't get it. But hey.
That wasn't a cyborg, Alex.
Cyborg's half robot. But he did have like the one eye missing, which kind of made it look cyborgish. If he had a robot eye in there, it would have been cyborg. Mm-hmm. All right. Good segment.
Final segment of the day of the week as we get you set for Tennessee Vanderbilt. And, man, what a big one. I'm excited. We'll come back. Final segment. Stick with us right here on 3 and Out.
Wish that I was on old Rocky Top down in the Tennessee hills.
Final segment of the day of the week.
Poor Charlie. Oh, Charlie. How dare he?
Yep.
That's what I thought. Oh, ready for this baseball game?
Yeah.
Do I take a nap? Nah.
Nah, it's only 7.
Yeah, no, I got to wake up early.
Oh, you got fishing this weekend?
You have a tournament. The Classic, Rebel Classic on Norris.
Classic. Huh? Mm.
Maybe they'll bite a little bit.
I have found that baseball games usually put me to sleep, so that's a great time to take the nap.
You used to have really late tonight. Getting ready for your wedding and everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's got the rehearsal. It might be... did you already have the bachelor party?
So, that's going to be after the fact.
Okay.
His best man's his younger brother. Mm-hmm. Younger brother did not do a good job of setting that up.
Mm.
Tried to get something together last minute. I was like, man, like some of these people like are coming in from out of town. Like you got to give a heads up. So I'll be overseeing that moving forward.
Gotcha. So it is tonight?
The rehearsal dinner is tonight, yes.
Are you doing like the bachelor thing?
They're playing golf right now.
Oh, I'm sorry. I know it's like your favorite thing.
Yeah. Well, also I debated with – pollen being the worst it's ever been, it feels like this year, I felt that me being on a golf course for 3 hours would not be a wise decision. And if I didn't have a speaking role, or was I'm like the most important person. If I didn't have that.
Back that. The bride. It's all about the bride. You remember that.
Nate's right.
As you officiate this wedding, the bride is the most important person at the wedding.
I'm the most important person. That's what I got it.
The mother of the bride is second. Keep that in mind, too.
Mm.
Because she probably got screwed over by her mother. So now this is her chance to get in the limelight for her kid. And it just gets passed down generationally. I'm not sure where the groom comes in. He might be top 5, maybe. But there's probably some other people on the bride side that are more. It depends on family dynamics at that
point.
But
back to me, I did not want to be sick tomorrow during the ceremony.
You're probably 12th-ish.
The guy making sure that they can get married is
probably
12.
No, you said you're not ordained. They're going to do it at the courthouse. Like, this is all just a sham.
I did not say that.
That's what you said.
That was off air. He said it.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. I'm just saying, like, it doesn't really matter what you do.
Yeah, you just diminished his role.
I'm sorry.
No, like, I literally, like, I'm there. If I'm not there, no one speaks. Mm. Kind of a big deal.
I think that if you weren't there, they'd just do it without you. I mean, they'd find someone else.
Probably, yeah.
You going to get your old hand problem fixed by tomorrow?
I don't know. I'm trying to loosen up my sinuses.
Can you just wash your hands
right
a lot?
Mm.
Can you just wash your hands and that'll even out?
Do you guys know about reflexology?
No. So, I've heard the term.
So, essentially, it's really big with your feet. Like, because all your nerve endings end up running down into your feet. And so, there are certain pressure points on different parts of your feet, like even through mm-hmm. your toes. And, like, if you put enough pressure on certain parts, like, you will feel it in, like, your back, your shoulders, even up into your sinuses. And so, with it being allergy season, I'm trying to loosen up my sinuses, but I can tell I'm starting to have some issues.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I was glad I passed on going to the golf course.
Smart.
Hmm.
I'm just glad you're taking this seriously. I commend you for having your verses ready.
Here's one homily set to go. Here's one to send you guys into the weekend.
Okay.
Eric Galco is the president of Optimum Scouting. Catch this tweet. Tennessee's Josh Palmer had 101 snaps versus likely top three-round corners. Patrick Surtain, Horn, Campbell, Stokes, and Joseph. He was 14 of 14 in catching the catchable balls in those matchups. Think about that. 101 snaps, he only got 14 catchable balls. 11 first downs, 4 touchdowns, 16 yards per reception. Eric Galco has Josh Palmer as a top 10 wide receiver in this draft.
So does Pro Football Focus.
That positivity about football reminded me of my good pal, Mike Eckler, which he tweeted at 7:07 this morning.
Mm.
Kind of late.
Late start, yeah.
He said, having issues at practice, ball football, several players have broken their GPSs.
No,
GPSs, meaning their speed devices. They're playing too damn fast.
Wow.
The chili is hot. It's running hot, I should say.
Chili's running hot.
Running hot.
Did you see what he said about Knoxville?
Nope.
He said, I feel like I've died and gone to heaven. I love this place. Great town, great community.
Sorry.
Didn't see that one.
That's a good one. It wasn't a tweet from him. It was just a quote.
Thanks for looking up.
Floodgates.
All right. We got players. We got top five matchups.
Come on, Tony V.
Tony V, get the job done. Let's go cheese.
Cheese.
Alex Comas will be breaking it all down for us on Monday. He'll be covering the game on Saturday.
Breaking down
boy,
my Commodores.
Coach.
Oh, my God.
Have a good week.
You can go to hell.
Your pet is